Okay, gute Woche, Boisai. We're on to our second part of our Chanukah discussion about the special role of women. It's Chanukah, in the celebration of Chanukah, and in understanding at, if you will, a bit of a deeper level, the significance of the place that the women held by appreciating the place that the woman holds in Yiddishkeit in general. So to recap briefly what we discussed last week, we discussed that the unique koyach of Yavon, of the Galus Yavon, the unique feature of the Jewish people being oppressed by Yavon, was different than all the other Galus in the sense that all the other Galus, all the other Malchis, we were subject to, were coming from the outside to exile, to crush, to obliterate. We're in Gullus, literally, outside of Eretz Yisrael, right, with all the other four Gullus. They exiled us, they kicked us out. Whereas Gullus Yavam was distinguished in the fact that we were in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash stood. But what were they doing? They were trying to ruin things from the inside, not to destroy the structure. Leave the structure in place. Let the Jews actually think that they're still where they ought to be. But to defile it from the inside, to inject the impurity, to inject the Hellenism into a Jewish people who are still living in Eretz Yisrael, still have a Beis HaMikdash, etc. And the truth is that, as we discussed, this feature of Yavon, this feature of Yavon, of injecting their Yavonness, if you will, their Greekness, into others, we actually still see today. Because, as we discussed, the truth is that even though now we're officially in Malchus Edoin, Yavon, Galus Yavon, still continues until today, enveloped in Malchus Edom. That's the Koyach of Yavon. They make their way in. They're there. They're not there to destroy what they're up against. They're there to infiltrate it, to get in from the inside, and to inject the Yavaniut, the Yavonness, in the inside. Kind of like a venomous snake. Now they work, the cobras, the big powerful snakes, and they actually inject. So the digestion starts before they even ate their victim, because the venom that makes its way into the victim's body already starts the digestion process. Yeah. This is Yavon. That's the Koyach of Yavon. And now we come from here to the Jewish woman. And again, to briefly recap what we discussed. Understanding that this is where the Greeks were taking the woman on her turf. Because the Ein B'Yisrael, the Isha B'Yisrael, she is entrusted with the battery of Klal Yisrael. The battery of Klal Yisrael is the Jewish home. That is the power plant. That's where it all stems from. And as we discussed, they had that specific gzeira requiring to defile the Kedusha of the Jewish union, of the Jewish marriage, by requiring any betrothed girl first had to appear before the Greek governor before she could marry. That's why actually Galus Yavon, like we said, it's distinguished in the fact that there was a Beis HaMikdash, right? The Medrash says there are four terms that Hashem uses, four affectionate terms that Hashem uses for the Jewish people. And Chazal say in the Medrash that each of those terms, Yenasi Tamasi Rayasi Achisi, and Shir Ashirin. I'm not going to get into all four right now, but these are four very affectionate expressions that Hashem uses for the Jewish people. And Chazal tell us that each of those four expressions Hashem used in a different galus, expressing that even though you might feel like you're not with me now, the affection is there, the focus is there, the attention, the care, the love is there. Yenasi, my dove, is the term that Hashem uses for Klal Yisrael when they were in under Yavon. Why? Yayna, Chazal say, Yayna is one of the karbanis that a yoledes, a woman after childbirth, offers. And at that time, the yainim, those karbanis, were being offered. And that's why we use the term yayna to describe the yavani, the galus under the yavani. Yeah, there were other karbanis also being offered. There were bulls being offered as oilis, and there were sheep, and there were rams, and there were, why the yayna? But again, this is the point. The galus yavan manifested davka in the yayna that a woman bought after childbirth, because this is what was being attacked. Childbirth, the construction of another neshama in Klal Yisrael, the construction of a bayis b'Yisrael, was what the Greeks were coming to defile that sanctified unit, right? That's why it's davka characterized with that. Okay, from here we went on to discuss portraits of two of our most famous women. These two were from the Sheva Neviyas. There are many more than seven Neviyas. The Chazal tell us that when we're talking about those Neviyim who left Nevor for all of history, there were seven women. And we began discussing two of them, Devaira and Chana. Devaira, in brief, we described as the woman, we described her immense powers, her immense influence. But her energies were not put into leading Klal Yisrael. We discussed this last week. Her energies were put into elevating a simple husband. Like we said last week, she would have, might have been able to consider herself as having been duped in Shiduchim. A woman of her level, a woman so deep, a woman so high, right? With a simple husband. But she, so that was this woman with enough koiches to influence all of Klal Yisrael. She did. But that was the what spilled over. That wasn't where she directed her energies. She appreciated that her role was to put all of those immense energies, energies that could encompass all of the Jewish people. Her husband was the recipient of those koiches to build him up a little bit more. And then we went from there to Chana. We discussed Chana and Elkanah, presumably the greatest couple in their time. Chana were presumably the greatest couple in their time. They were chosen by Hashem to be the parents of, this was a turning point in history, that period. We discussed this, and I'm spending a little time bringing us back up to date, but we still have time to move on. This was the turning point in history where the period of the Shoftim was coming to an end. There had to now be a new system of kings in Klal Yisrael, and there had to be the person to take the Jewish people by the hand and guide them into that new point in history. Basically, the man who would change the course of history of Klal Yisrael. And Hashem was selecting carefully who would be the couple who would do that. And this was Elkanah and Chana. Elkanah and Chana, the Jewish people at that point, again, this was the tail end of a very great period, period of the Shoftim, but this was the tail end. It was when the system was really starting to decline. And it was at a low. It had, the relationship of the Jewish people with our father, with Avinu Shebashamayim, had reached a certain low. It was dehydrated. People weren't coming to the Mishkan. They weren't really connecting. It was a general just deadness that prevailed all around Klal Yisrael. And both Elkanah and Chana were very, very disturbed by this. And we described last week how Elkanah went out single-handedly to have his impact. This was a man, he wasn't a king, he wasn't in a position of power, but he dedicated himself to a single-handed campaign of being Mekar of Klal Yisrael back to Hashem. And we saw that slowly through his tenacity, he reversed, he created a whole new wave of people coming back to the Mishkan. Elkanah epitomized the man in the position of the male, the man in the position of going out and achieving and impacting and influencing. Chana had equally great koiches. I don't know exactly if they were equal, if he was greater, if she was greater. It doesn't make a difference. They were both supremely great people, greatest people of their time. if he was a little greater than her, she was a little greater than him, it was exactly the same, I don't know, whatever. But she was in the same mindset, but she responded in the woman's way. And what was that? Give me a child, and I will change the face of the Jewish people by putting all my energies into my own child. Now, let's not make any mistake about it. I'm not coming to say that, well, the whole business about her wanting a child was completely altruistic. There was nothing about her wanting a child. She was above that. No, it's an innate kayach in a woman, right? To want a child, to long for a child. It could be the most painful ordeal for a woman not to have one. Hashem put her through that. But on the contrary, the point is that it all merged together, right? The idea is that we don't have two different systems. There's our innate feelings, and then there's our service of Hashem. She understood that these natural feelings are sacred ones, and they all blended together with her love for Hashem, with her passion for Hashem, and she passionately wanted a child because of her motherly feelings, and those motherly feelings were all part of her relationship with Hashem. It was one big mixture. It was all merged together. And while her husband, as we said before, while her husband was busy out there influencing the masses, she came along. She was his wife. She was on those trips. But where was her? Where did she? Was she longing to put her energy? She wanted a child. She was longing for a child. 19 long years. She waited and longed and hurt. She was lonely, waiting for that child. And the turning point actually came at a time when we all know the story. I'm going to skip different parts and we'll focus on different parts. Really, the story itself deserves from beginning to end its own attention. But we know the story of Penina, right? Everybody's familiar in general. If you're not, please speak up and I'll elaborate a little more. But everyone's familiar in a general way that there was the other wife, Penina. I don't know if everybody knows this, but that Penina, Elkanah actually married Penina, Elkanah's urging. He married her because after they had been childless for a long time, she said, Sarah Imenu at this point urged her husband to take another wife in order to bear children. So she urged him to take Penina. But Lamaisa, Penina started tormenting her. And that's also something that deserves explanation. It's not as simple as it seems. But Penina started tormenting her. And this went on and on. And finally, at one point, they were at the Mishkan in Shiloh. They had come from one of his trips. Dafka, at these trips to the Mishkan, the tensions between Ham and Penina would reach their peak because, like we said, Yontiv, a very big family experience, and Elkanah would offer karbanos and then make a big, exciting family business out of it. And they would all sit down at the table, and Penina would be busy settling her kids and giving
How
out the food.
How many kids did she have, Penina?
Penina had ten children.
Ten children.
Yeah. And giving out the food, and Chana sat on the side. What happened was, this was a regular pattern. It was kind of like a vicious cycle. Elkanah was always sensitive to Chana, Dafka, in those situations. He's busy with his whole family, but very aware of Chana on the side. So he would Dafka give her special attention at those times. This aroused Penina's envy even more. She would respond by, you know, shooting darts at Chana. It was mamish, a vicious cycle, Dafka at those times in the Mishkan. So one time this happened, and Chana sat on the side and she was crying. She couldn't eat. Now Chana sat down next to her and he said something which, very caring thing to say. He said to her, why are you crying so much? He said to her, this is different Pirushim and Mepharshim, exactly what he meant by this statement. But I'll give one of the Pirushim. He said, you want children? He said, I love you more than 10 sons would. So he said to her, very caring statement on his part. But for her, it was actually like a certain shock. Why? Because what was in the statement? He wasn't telling here. The whole time she had been thinking, I'm davening, he's davening, I'll get a child. This was already a certain statement of, you'll be okay without it, right? I love you so much that she almost heard like a certain resignation, right? And all of a sudden it hit her. She said, it's the Malbim, others say, okay, it's not going to be his tefillos. If I'm going to have a child, it's only going to be my tefillos. And she got up then, like somebody with a new resolve. She had that flash, right? She got up then. She went to the Mishkan. It was a time when people weren't there. People were reading the Suddhas at this point. Where she would be on her own. And she had been davening for 19 years. She had been davening for 19 years. But this was the tefillah of her life. Not only was it the tefillah of her life, this tefillah serves as a model. Many of the hilchus tefillah that we have today, the halachos of tefillah and Shulchan Aruch, are based on the model of this tefillah of Chana. It's a famous tefillah as Chana.
Really fun, because I know I have something that's called tefillah Chana, but it's really Shiras Chana.
Shiras Chana is the next parak, right?
Right, so I'm saying, what is Shiras Chana? It's always titled as Shiras Chana by Bachas Teras, but really it's the Shiras Chana. It tells you the story that they go and everything, and then it goes after she has made, you know, to Rebecca, and it says that whole Shira. So what is...
So the tefillah in the psukim is very concise. It's presented in one or two psukim per tefillah. But the psukim themselves say that she davened at great length. So obviously the psukim are not giving you the whole picture. Chazal give different pieces of the tefillah. If you remind me, Blina, that I'll send you what I have written up on that. And send me an email afterwards. But here's the point that I'm getting to, was that she... In this tefillah had a lot of different parts to it, and Chazal spent a lot of time analyzing her tefillah. But it had certain parts which were, if we'll use the word, aggressive. She said certain things that most of us should not dare to say. Just one example. There all kinds of, she came from all kinds of different angles in her tefillah. The one thing that she said was, for example, she said, Hashem, know that if a woman is suspected of disloyalty, should be brought to the Beis HaMikdash and put through the Tzaita process. And the Torah says that if she's actually innocent, she will conceive and have a baby. Right? So Chana said, would you like me to do that? That's what she said in her tefillah. I can go and do that, she said to Hashem. And you will have to, you know, it's a derosta plaster. You'll have to, you know, you're going to have to uphold what your Torah says. And you'll have to give me a child. A very bold thing to say. Chazal says, she spoke brazenly to Hashem. I have to realize this. We have to realize something. You're not allowed to speak brazenly to Hashem. Period. There were other great people in history who tried such tefillahs. Mara tells about one of the great Amoraim who tried such a tefillah. His tefillah was answered and he became crippled. You have to realize that whatever's going on, Hashem is Hashem and Yoyu. You can't forget that, no matter what's going on. Right? We don't have timeness on Hashem.
And, wait a minute, I'm sorry, but Hashem's big enough to take it. And if you're coming out of tremendous emotional pain, I don't think Hashem's going to just cripple you or punish you because you are speaking brazenly.
You know what? I'll grant that. I will grant that. Sometimes a person is just expressing pain, and that Hashem wants to hear. That Hashem wants to hear. But if you decide, I'll just say it like this for now. If you decide this is the approach, sometimes if it's just an unbridled expression of what you're feeling, that is a very beloved form of tefillah, right? But sometimes a person plans his tefillah and knows what he wants to say. People should put thought into planning their tefillahs, right? When a person comes with such an approach, he has to realize that he's treading a very, very, very thin ice. There's a difference between letting it out, just expressing to Hashem whatever is in your heart, and structuring the tefillah.
Well, okay? That's premeditated, where she says, I know what the rule is, and I can do this. I
mean, exactly.
That's a different
That's thing, right. She. This was a very carefully articulated tefillah.
I'm not sure they did the same thing.
Okay, good. So Chazal lists three people who express themselves this way, and Chazal say it as like a shvach. Chana, Eliyahu, and Moshe. These were the three people who Hashem took it with pleasure. It was accepted biratzah, right? Now, others, like we said, great people express themselves this way. Remember who you are, remember more, right? Yeah, you have to remember who you're dealing with. At the end of the day, you still have to remember, at the end of the day, dealing with Hashem, you have to maintain due reverence. But in Chana's place, it was accepted lovingly. In Chana's case, also Moshe and Eliyahu. Why? Comes back to the point that we said before. Again, I'm setting aside now. I'm talking about a tefillah that's really formulated as a proper tefillah, as an approach, not an expression of emotion, which is always welcome. And then you should still be careful. You still have to be careful. You still always have to remember the place between us and Hashem. But Abdesra has a very profound piece, which is elaborated on in the Sefer by his son-in-law, and also by his Talmud, Tzichayim, where he says that Moshe, Eliyahu, and Chana were expressing an outcry of pain, not just for themselves and not just for Klal Yisrael, but for Hashem's honor. And that was why they were expressing themselves aggressively. And in such situations, it's actually, such a tefillah is actually cherished. We're coming back to the point that Chana was hurting over the state of Klal Yisrael, just like her husband Elkanah was. She was hurting over Hashem's honor, and she was hurting over her own pain. And she, again, unlike Elkanah, who was going to go out there and influence, she wanted to take all of her immense energies and put them into that single child. And that's why she ended up having seven. But this one child that she had him for 2 years. Right? She said she's going to dedicate him to Hashem at the age of 2 years. But he already was at that point. It's indescribable. But what she put into him in those 2 years, it's mind-boggling. So here we're coming back to our point. The difference between Elkanah and Chana, in this sense, both of them with the same sublime feelings, right? Elkanah was focused all those energies outward. She focused all those energies inward. And she produced the Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi was not, if you will, another Navi. No Navi was another Navi. But Shmuel HaNavi was perhaps the greatest of Nevi'im after Moshe Rabbeinu. Perhaps. Okay. So now, what we're coming back to is this point that we're making. The greatness of the Jewish woman is in that innate nature of the kaychus, the fuel that she puts into her home, that which is Lamaisa, the cornerstone of what Klal Yisrael is. Klal Yisrael, all the great achievements on the national scene are the shoots that are sprouting forth from that battery called the Bais B'Yisrael, right? And this is the turf of the Jewish woman. This is the turf of the Jewish woman. This is what she's entrusted with. She is the Kohen Gadol in that home. And therefore, for example, Chazal say that a number of statements to this effect that just simply understood seem like it's hard to properly understand them. But just for example, right, Rabbi Yisrael said, I always used to refer to my wife as my home. Right? What he meant to say was, I draw my koiches out of, it was a great Tana teaching many, many, many Talmidim. But there's the battery that he drew the fuel off, right? It's the home. The home was not a station where you went to let your hair down and go to sleep. The home was a power plant of Kedusha. And Chazal also say, Isha ein atzara be'olch en yisum in ha'ish. Women have a harder time with letting guests in than men do. Now, what's the depth behind this? The depth behind this is that, again, this is her domain. She is responsible to preserve its sanctity, its purity, its exclusivity. And she has innate feelings that are aligned with that. This might come out in the form of, in a superficial way, it can come out in a very just selfish form. I don't want people intruding on my territory. But there is a very, very powerful form behind, powerful kayach behind it, that she is also responsible for the protection of the home. She is responsible for the protection of the home in the spiritual sense. Therefore, Right? Sarah is the one who said, get Yishmael out. Avraham Avinu had a hard time with it. Avraham Avinu was the great Makariv. He was out there being Makariv. He wanted to be Makariv people in his home also. But Sarah said, first and foremost, the home has to be a unit of absolute sanctity. Everything else can build off that. Everything else can build off that. And here, we come back to Yavon, right? Yavon imposed their zeros. And, you know, we've been through Corona. Things that might seem shocking, might seem completely out of whack, get used to them soon enough, right? So we've seen that, that's human nature. It goes that way with zeros also. And there were a few different incidents that sparked the revolt of the Jews against the Greeks. In the beginning, they were going with an approach of, you know, the halacha is you have to give up your life for certain things. They were giving up their lives, right? We have those heroic stories of the people in the cave and the Bris Mila story. You see some of these stories inside, the stories that are very famous in a general way, about the woman who made the Bris Mila for her son, for her baby, and then went up to a rooftop and threw herself down. She didn't do Bris Mila in the privacy of her home and kill herself. She made a public Bris Mila with a band, with an orchestra, it says. Right? She celebrated it in full form. They finished the bris. She went up to the rooftop and threw herself down with her child. The Jews were sticking out their necks. They were giving up their lives until it reached a point where it went from there to revolt. What sparked that? What caused the change in thinking? There were a few incidents. One of them was also a story of a woman. I'm not talking about Yehudis right now. By the way, the story of Yehudis also, we all, you know, I heard it since I was three. If you actually see it inside, the story itself is not like inspiring. I would say, if you see it inside, it is. If you actually see it in the source, you see the tefillahs that were going on there. You see the burning emunah that was guiding her every step of the way. It's a very elevating story. If you already know the dry facts, the comic book facts, if you will, right? The heroic story of what she did, she cut off its head and she fed him the stuff. But to actually see the story inside is elevating. You see that the emunah that she went with, the tefillahs that she was going with the whole time, see how she articulated them. But there was another incident, and that was the incident where, again, we talked about this gzeira, right? The gzeira that was directed specifically at the Jewish bride. The sister of the Maccabim was betrothed, and okay, I guess it was like all the gzeiras that they were already kind of like Corona phenomena, right? You get used to things. But she didn't. And when they made one of the feasts that they had in leading up to the marriage, she appeared in a very, very unbecoming way, which startled, shocked, humiliated the family. And she said to them, "What's the problem? You're fine with this, right?" And that, like, suddenly, like, gave them all a jolt. That was one of the different incidents that sparked the Maccabim to actually go take up the battle. So what are we seeing here? We're seeing here again that the sensitivity of the Jewish woman to the purity, to the sanctity of the home, right? As long as, you know, Haman, we don't have stories of women going to fight Haman, right? Someone is coming to kill us. Let the men figure out what to do. It's their job, right? Someone is coming to, but when the sanctity, the purity, the pristineness of the core of Yiddishkeit was being threatened, this was the woman being challenged on her turf. And she responded like a Jewish mother. Fire, right? With fire, with passion. So we're coming back to this halacha. We're coming back to this halacha, that Hanukkah, when the candles are lighting, for that basic half hour, most of us put in enough oil, it burns for hours. But we're talking about for the basic time that the candles have to be burning, that is a yom tov for women. Women are not doing halacha then. They're in their homes, right? They're in their homes. Actually celebrating the woman's place in her home. Celebrating the woman's place in her home. You're celebrating the woman's reign in her kingdom, in her palace, Now, yes, today's generation, today's reality, might be going out to work, etc. Okay, but to remember that where is my primary tafkid, my primary mission, primary target of my energies is the sanctity of my home, is the purity of my home, is to create that breeding ground, that fertile soil that Bezos Hashem, my children can sprout into very great Oivdei Hashem, very great Oivdei Hashem, to be on guard with the ferocity of a tiger, right? Not to allow things to infiltrate in. Now, sometimes the ferocity of the tiger has to go along with good sense. You have to do things with discretion, carefully. You don't want to just be yelling. You want to make your point. You want to get it across. Okay. But we're talking now on the conceptual level to appreciate the task, the responsibility. But from here, I want to go to another point. From here, I want to go to another point. And this is a very fundamental point to make. By the way, when I say the ferocity of a tiger, I shouldn't say that. The ferocity is not a good word to use about a woman operating with her family. But maybe toward the outside, yes. But think again about Devorah's example. Devorah's example of the encouragement, the giving him important roles in order to move him into a higher place, right? Of trying to create that sense of, now, I know that my wife, that my mother, that my grandmother would be looking up to me if I would X, Y, Z. These are feelings that they have the power to plant. But I want to make another point. We talked about having a child like Shmuel HaNavi. Having a child like Shmuel HaNavi. What happens if your child is not like Shmuel HaNavi? What happens if your child is very much not like Shmuel HaNavi? That's it. So here I want to make a very, very fundamental point. Because on the one hand, it goes in both directions, but it's all the same point. There was one time Rav Shach told this story that perhaps he was once walking with the Brisker Rav, and somebody walked by. It was a person who was known to be, he was a very, very problematic person. I don't know what the story was. I don't know if he was a public figure, a private figure, but problematic guy. His children, one after the other, were beautiful products. Like Mamish, Pe'er, one after the next, magnificent personalities, great people. Someone is the Brisker Rav. Look at their father, how they turn out that way. So the Brisker Rav in his very terse, you know, blunt style said, maybe they have a mother too. So Shach said that it's a very fundamental point. He said, maybe as a mother. That is a principle that applies all over the place. Rav Shach applied it like this. He was once sitting and just expressing his amazement at Rashi. How could there be a Rashi? How could a person emerge like Rashi? That, you know, everybody from the 5-year-old boy till the 75-year-old sage are busy learning. How could such a personality emerge? Rav Shach said, I think it's the same as Brisker Rav said. Maybe he had a mother. But again, what happens if your child is not Rashi and he's not Shmuel HaNavi? So I want to make a very, very fundamental point to understand. As we said before, we mentioned this in last week. We are using examples when we're trying to illustrate the concept of the power of the Jewish woman, the Jewish mother, the Jewish wife, the Jewish grandmother, the Jewish sister, the Jewish daughter. We used examples that you can measure the success in this world. We talked about a Shmuel. Just now we talked about a Rashi. And we made the point last week that that's not really how things are measured. It can sometimes be an indication, but things are measured on the inside. Just like we're talking about the koyach of the home is the koyach of the inside, the pnimius, the inside. Among the four sons, we have the Ein Yodea Lishma. This is the point that I want to finish with. And if you only listening to this part, I think that it's worthwhile, because this is a message that is not, perhaps not stated enough, but has to be. The last of the four sons in the Agada is the Einir de Elisha. What's the Einir de Elisha? In the Agada, you always have it as a two-year-old kid with his thumb in his mouth and pacifier or something like that. That's one pshat. But then there's another pshat also. It's a child who's maybe 20 years old, but he doesn't even have the ability to ask. He's too thick-brained, too obtuse, comes in, right? The Tom asks, what's going on here? He comes into the Leila, so there, sits down, deadpan face, all kinds of unusual things, sits down, he's ready to eat. This is the guy who doesn't get it. This is the guy who, even if you explain it to him, he won't get it. Explain it again, he'll start getting it. So there's the Sefer Menucha of Kedusha says that each of the four sons is making a very important point. This is something we're not going to get into right now. I want to focus on Einir de Elisha, but each of them is stressing a very fundamental point in Chinuch. Einir de Elisha is making the following point. You might think, look at this kid. He is intellectually impaired or spiritually impaired, right? Might be in a bad place, naturally, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. I'm going to put energies and energies and energies. Maybe it'll get him a centimeter forward. Forget it. I'm going to put my energies into the chacham. I have a chacham. I have a rasha. We're trying to deal with him too. I have a tam. Tam is the classic kid to send to school, right? Then he had the, he's not going to get it anyways. Right? I'm not going to put my koichas in here. Or the rasha. The rasha. Forget about it. Let me put my koichas into the ones who want to succeed. Right? He said, no. He said, Einir de Elisha, he's barely going to get it. He's thick-brained. What's that? Oh, you got to where we were headed. Very good. It's the innate nature of the Jewish mother here at work. So the Einir de Elisha, no, Hashem is saying that I want him. Like the point of the Arba Banim is that the Torah comes from four different angles to express the Gadol Bincha. I want your children to know who I am for you. Right, that's the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Who I am for you. Because you have that mentally impaired child. You have the Rasha. I want him. I want him. Don't say, he's not going to get it anyways. Let me put my Kalichas where it's... Do you have any idea of what the value is? Take the Chacham. Okay, this is the conscientious son. The brilliant and conscientious son. The storybook son. He's going to get it all. You know what? Whatever he's going to get is also only the tip of the iceberg. We're talking about Torah. Whatever he's going to get is also only the tip of the iceberg. What does Hashem value? Hashem values the fact that we are putting all of our efforts into developing a little bit more of a connection with Hashem and our children. In the case of the Chacham, if we're talking about a billion miles, in the case of the Chacham, you're going to get half a mile. In the case of the Einir de Elisha, you'll get a few inches. Half a mile is also very far from a billion miles. But Hashem wants human efforts, human growth. And even though we might think that there's an immense difference, come on, to me it's all the same. To me, all the same. But we're talking in human terms anyways. For Hashem, human terms is barely anything. What I want is the efforts. And part of the efforts is the Mesiras Nefesh. And what does Hashem say he loves about Avraham Avinu so much? I love him. I connected him. I'm attached to him because he will be instructing his children along my path. So do we know the value? If you can get that thick-brained child to understand a little bit more, you said 17 times, and here we get to the point. At psachloi, we're talking. The father might not be able of dealing with this. Let him focus on the chacham. At, right, mother, you stick yourself to that child, right, and just do it again and again and again. He finds, oh, now I get it. We have Hashem. He took us out of Mitzrayim. Your husband is a million miles ahead with all the sophisticated explanations of the Haggadah, but this kid now suddenly chap, oh, Hashem likes us, that's why he took us out of Mitzrayim. That's immense, right? That's immense. Is he going to become a famous Gadol Hador? In this world, maybe not. In the next world, very likely. And in the next world, you might be a Chana. for producing that child who was able to get that ounce of understanding. Or in the case of this son who's spiritually impaired. Rav Shteinman made this point, that sometimes the children that we think we're going to get recognition from Shemayim, I gave them the teacher, I gave them the koyches, I gave them the, you know, they're flying ahead. By the way, the chiddush of the chacham is, don't say this kid is doing fine anyways, I don't need to put energies into him. Put those energies into the chacham. But the main schar, me being the child, you said, I'm trying so hard. We're not moving anything. We're not getting anywhere. You don't know. You don't know what that's planting. And you don't know what the value is of that little bit more, of that extra centimeter, of that extra inch. And it takes a Jewish mother to be able to see greatness where other people see emptiness, where other people see badness. But the mother, the At Psachloi, she sees greatness in that extra ounce, in that extra centimeter. And he moves, she can be so excited about. She can feel like he's the greatest thing in the world for moving that little bit more. So, yes, we understand that Hanukkah, appreciate your place, appreciate your role, appreciate your status, and appreciate the faith that Hashem put into you. I sometimes tell people, you know, Hashem gave me these children. Tell them, we don't understand Hashem's ways. You know what? What is the pshat? The pshat is that Hashem has more faith in you than you have in yourself. Hashem sees in you more than you see in yourself. Appreciate that too. And celebrate those moments in the light of the menorah properly, Bezos Hashem.
Thank you,
Zev.
Very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a good week.
You're well.